There's a sad irony to a moth-eaten butterfly. I set the coffee maker to just heat some water and took as hot a shower as the motel's plumbing and budget would allow. A quick ramen dinner, and then I made weak tea with just a pinch of sugar. I didn't want to stay awake. The TV's depth axis was shot, so rather than watch crap in 2.5 dimensions, I flipped through the various books on my notebook and settled on Down the River, a collection of short stories by recent Iowa graduates. I had a paper copy at home, a contributor's freebie, but the only story I'd read in it was my own, checking for typos. Mildly curious about the competition, I got halfway through the second story before I turned off the notebook and the light. It was still raining when I woke up. Not cold or windy, so I guess if I were a serious cyclist, I'd just man up and pedal out into it. Instead, I made a double-strong, double-sugar cup of coffee with real cream and took the motel's chair out under the eaves and sat looking at and listening to the rain, not thinking about the novel or anything in particular. Then I went back inside, made another cup, and unrolled the notebook and its keyboard. What would Hunter do in the rain? Not a scene from the movie, but what the hell? Chapter 8. Hunter liked the sound of rain drumming on his metal roof. The fact of the rain, though, was a little annoying. He had eaten one frozen meal and wanted a fresh one, but there wouldn't be many joggers out. Not many potential witnesses, either. No diversions left. He was tired of reading, and television was earnest documentaries and Saturday morning cartoons, which offered sufficient violence but no appetizing consequences. With no particular destination in mind, he got in the van and headed north, playing a Jacksonville radio station on the radio but not hearing the music, listening for weather updates. He got gas in Georgia, filling up at a place that was too ramshackle and open to have surveillance cameras. He did have to go inside to pay, and considered the risk-benefit ratio of killing the dim-witted clerk and emptying the register. The boy was skinny and sallow and smelled bad, which may have saved his life. And there could have been a hidden camera amidst the chaotic jumble of merchandise behind him. Hunter bought 8 super red hot sausages and, unseen back in the van, ate them like a sword swallower, one after the other, while he studied the map. The rain had let up when he stopped, but now it continued with redoubled force. He took a left turn and then angled down a county road that pointed into Alabama. He came upon his prize only 15 minutes down the road. A large woman on the gravel margin hunched against the force of the rain, working on an upside-down bicycle. He slowed down and waved at her, blinking his lights. She waved back, and he pulled off the road in front of her and backed up. He rolled down the window as she came up, wiping the water from her long hair. She was big, not quite half his size, and he salivated at the thought of all that delicious fat. "Golly, thanks, mister!" He flung the door open with such force that she sprawled almost to the middle of the road. But she was standing, staggering, by the time he heaved himself out of the van. He took 2 ponderous steps and dropped her with a punch to the solar plexus. Faster now. He grabbed her wrists and roughly dragged her to the back of the van. Locked. Stupid of him. The driver's side door was still open. He lumbered back to it and stretched to reach the keys in the ignition. Sudden sharp pain in his back. He turned, and she was standing there with a narrow blade knife, a switchblade stiletto, staring at the color of his blood. The wound was not serious. He backhanded her so hard her neck snapped. She was limp but still alive as he tied her up and manacled her in the back. She managed some incoherent growls and moans, too soft to annoy him or attract attention, so he didn't bother with the duct tape. "Be happy," he called back. "You're out of the rain." Decisions. Maybe leave Georgia for this one, so as not to have the same group of state police studying his spoor. Drive on into Alabama, or maybe all the way through to Mississippi. No. The need was growing in him. Alabama would do. He was across the border in 30 minutes and stopped at a McDonald's for a bag of small burgers and 10 orders of fries. He gulped it all down, driving one-handed but with intense care before he left the interstate. He had memorized the map and the Google Maps screen that showed the nameless dead-end dirt road that was his tentative destination. At the first small road, he pulled over to the shoulder to check on his quarry. He was too big to crawl through the van, so he chanced opening the rear doors. Her eyes were closed, but when he forced her mouth open and poured in some water, she coughed and gagged. "That's good. It won't be long now." "Please," she croaked. Do whatever you want." "Don't worry. I will." He eased the doors shut and went back toward the front of the van, but she started to scream. Annoying. He went back to the rear doors, swung them open, and hit her head twice on the metal floor, just hard enough to stun her. "Please, you'll only cause trouble for yourself." He tore off a piece of duct tape and smoothed it over her mouth. Then he tore off a small piece and closed one nostril. "Wouldn't that be an awful way to die?" Before getting back into the van, he stepped into the forest, studying the loam. The van would leave tracks when he went off the road. If it rained harder, they would be obliterated, but the forecast called for the rain to taper off and stop in a couple of hours. He studied his memory of the Google Maps images. The topographical map showed a ridge to the east and a gravel road in a few miles that ran up it. He would drive up there and check the soil and underbrush. In the small cooler between the seats, he'd stashed alternating quarts of beer and Coke. Took a Coke to be on the safe side. Wouldn't do to be stopped in the middle of nowhere and forced to kill a state trooper. 2, probably. He almost missed the unmarked gravel road and reversed back up to it. He drove up the rise and pulled over, out of sight from the paved road, and stopped to listen for a couple of minutes. No traffic. No sound but the ticking of his engine and the patter of raindrops. He drove on slowly for about a mile and a half. The road ended at the gray ruin of a clapboard shack with a collapsed roof. Saplings grew out of the interior. The front door was missing, and there was no glass in the windows. Still, some indigent might have sought shelter there. He quietly shucked a shell into the 12-gauge and eased heavily out of the van, alert. His eyes adjusted to the gloom inside the cabin. Sound of a rat or squirrel scurrying away. No other signs of life except spiders and millipedes. Woodsy smell with a touch of mildew. The exposed beams under the part of the roof that was intact were strong enough to support his weight. He went back to the van and brought out the chains and hook and large cooler. When he returned for the woman, her eyes were open, unblinking. She didn't resist when he handcuffed her wrists together and then her ankles. Should he rape her? He had done that to the first 2 women and 1 man, but there was no special joy in it, and it proved nothing. He already had total control over them, so sticking a protuberance into an opening was a trivial exercise. Besides, if he were interrupted and had to leave body parts behind, the fluid they found in her vagina would not be human in chemistry or biology. He hung her up by the heels and stooped to remove the duct tape. "Don't scream. There's no one around to hear you, and you'll just annoy me." She winced when he jerked the tape off, then worked her jaw and said, "This is the weirdest dream I've ever had." "It's not a dream, Cooper." He'd looked in her wallet. "It's not even a nightmare." "I refuse to believe that. You'll kill me, and then I'll wake up." He almost smiled. "That's a new way of coping. None of the others have said that." He unrolled her lycra shorts and left them bunched around her knees. "Most girls your age shave around the pubic region, the bathing suit part, at least." "I'm sure you're an expert." Her voice was conversational but quaking. "You can say cunt, under the circumstances." "Heavens, no. I don't know you well enough." He sliced her T-shirt from neck to waist and then cut both sleeves to remove it. She was wearing a red sports bra. He snapped the elastic but left it alone. How many others?" 12. You'll be lucky 13. The newspapers call me Hunter. You haven't heard of me?"
I never read the paper or watch the news."
"Oh, is it too depressing?" He made small nicks over each kneecap and watched the blood trickle down.
"If you read the newspapers, you might have thought twice before bicycling alone out in the woods."
"My boyfriend and parents know where..."
"I'm sure they do. We'll be in another state before they get around to calling the police. You'll be in quite another state." He wiped one stream of blood with his forefinger and tasted it. "Type O, I believe."
"Look, if this is a gag..."
"There may be gagging." He stuck out his tongue and licked the trickle of blood from the other leg in one slow sweep. Then he wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. "You are delicious." He went outside and came back with a large plastic bucket with a lid. He pried off the lid and put the bucket on the floor underneath her head. Then he sat down cross-legged, facing her eye to eye. "Carolyn Cooper, you must bike a lot."
"No. Yes."
Tears were running down her forehead. "Your thighs and calves are very muscular, but not too lean. Do you go to school?" She shook her head no. "Church? Do you go to church?"
"You? United Southern Baptist."
"Southern Baptist.